The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We had a texter in about that last segment. Let the dog owners kiss their dogs and become sick, I say. That's Niall from Swords. Niall, you're all heart, but I guess if people love their dogs, they can kiss whoever they want to. But I don't know that there'll be any kissing in love between our next two guests. We have Marion McKeown, a journalist, and Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated columnist, on to talk to us about all things from the USA. Cal, I'm going to start with you. Some news that I'm sure will make you very happy. The Senate has voted to overturn Trump's emergency declaration.
Well, let me just start by welcoming you to the program. And secondly, Marion and I have kissed each other. So there, I have pictures to prove it.
We're going to have to see those pictures. They're going up on Twitter.
Just because we sometimes disagree on political issues doesn't mean we can't be friends. And that's one of the problems we have in our culture of the U.S. and I dare say other places. Now, as far as this resolution in the Senate is concerned, I don't think it's going to be binding. The president has a constitutional authority to declare national emergencies. Presidents preceding him, as has been pointed out by many people, have done the same thing. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. I certainly think the president's reaction, and we'll probably hear it even while we're on the program today on Twitter, because he's very fast at responding to these things, is going to say, well, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway because I have the authority to do it. And parts of it are already been built and parts of it have been built. So I'm not really sweating it. I think it's needed. I think we've got a problem. We can't have open borders. We've got problems with kids and sexual abuse of some of them and others. And I just think that a better control of our southern border is desperately needed.
I just want to ask you about this whole idea of presidents going on a solo run. I'm from Southern California originally, and my dad was in the Korean War, and he was really upset about the way that Truman had done that by bypassing Congress to begin that. And then not only that, he added on 2 years to his service right towards the end. It was called the Truman years. He was meant to get out the following week, and suddenly Harry Truman said, no, you're going to stay in for another 2 years. This is what happens to lives when presidents are able to go on solo runs. Do you think that it's a good thing that the president can do this, can bypass Congress? Is that a positive thing on any front?
Well, with respect to the Korean War, and congratulations, by the way, for getting out of California before it became a failed state.
Cal, you're all heart, jeez.
If the United States had not intervened in the Korean War, the North Koreans, with their help from their Chinese friends, their only supporters, by the way, they take care of 95% of their economy. Without China, they would be nothing. The North Koreans, and with the help of the Chinese, would have invaded South Korea, and we wouldn't have had the prosperity of a South Korea and the freedom of South Korean people. So there may have been some mistakes made with the Korean War, and a lot of people died in it, but without it, I think all of the Korean peninsula could potentially look like North Korea, dark at night.
Marion,
no boot.
Marion, I'm going to need you to jump in there and save our listeners from the wisdom of Cal.
Hello there, Carl, and welcome. And hello to my dear friend, Cal. How are you? First of all, I have to contradict Cal on one thing. If your definition of a failed state, Cal, is California, which is the world's fifth largest economy on its own, I would not like to see your definition of a successful state, or maybe I would. The states in America that contribute nothing or very little to the federal coffers are overwhelmingly the red states, the states like Wyoming, Idaho, all those states. California subsidizes all of them, as well you note. It's also the breadbasket of America, the fruit basket of America, and the vegetable basket of America, not to mention the home of all new inventions, everything from Silicon Valley, the internet, you name it. So let's leave California alone.
Yeah, it's a fruit basket, not a fruit case, Cal. Back off.
So there. No, you can't seriously call California a failed state. But back to this resolution. Look, I agree with Cal on this. There are up to about 13 or 14 Republican senators, aides of which I've spoken to, are people who are connected to them, who I've spoken to, who say that they're unsure, they're wavering, they're unhappy. I think they'll certainly get they're going to get it overturned initially. They're not going to veto a veto on this, because you would need 20 Republican senators to join Democrats for this to become veto-proof, and that just isn't going to happen because too many of them are afraid of being primaried and having the wrath of Trump's base descend upon them. So I think that this will be defied. It's not helpful to Trump, though. It's the first real crack from the Republicans, even if it's only a small crack, and it also isn't going to help the court cases that are all coming up. And, you know, it is wrong. Now, I actually happen to think that a country has a right to defend its borders, and a country has a right to have borders, whether it's whatever the border that country chooses. And, you know, the Democrats did agree to 600-700 miles of border when George Bush was president. And some of this is undeniably that Donald Trump, they don't like him, but particularly they don't like the way they've gone about, he's gone about this. And they are absolutely right in that. You know, if he said, I want 30 miles of wall, in exchange for that, I'll have a proper, fair asylum system. I won't keep people over in Mexico where they're ill or where they're subject to the harassment by gangs and everything else.
But Marion, speaking about that, let's just be really clear. If you go to the Southern American border from Nicaragua, mm-hmm. why does it have to be America you go to? Why do people not go to any other place? Why isn't Mexico taking part? Why aren't the Hondurans, the Belizeans, the many countries in between these places? Why is it up to the USA? And let's not forget that that wall is going to cost about 1% of the federal budget. Why is it such a sticking point?
Okay, I think it's a sticking point because, first of all, it is a stick with which the Democrats can beat Donald Trump. But you go back to the summer this year and to the child separation policy and the brutality of that and the cruelty of it. And Trump isn't about a wall per se, because as I say, the Democrats did allow George Bush to build 670 miles of wall without any problem. The problem is that Donald Trump is using this as a white nationalist symbol, as a symbol of keeping brown people out of America and keeping America safe for white people. His rhetoric around this has been absolutely disgusting. And Democrats will say this is what they're objecting to. I think that if Donald Trump had sat down, look, they were giving him $25 billion a year ago for this wall. You know, they were giving him, if he agreed to allow the Dreamers to stay in the country. So it's not that they were saying absolutely no to the wall. They are saying no to the way he has gone about negotiating it. And I think as regards your other question, the refugee laws, as I understand it, you normally do seek refuge in the first country that you reach. But the countries that these families have to traverse between, we'll say, Nicaragua or Guatemala and the United States are not safe countries either. They're not countries where they would be safe. They're countries where their lives would remain at risk and where they would be at risk to many of the same dangers that they're fleeing from. So,
I've travelled in Central America. I don't think
the
people in Central America probably wouldn't like to hear that you don't think their countries are up to scratch. I appreciate
I
you defending
listen.
California, but Cal, would you be defending the Central American countries in the same way then?
Well, I think, you know, there's countries like Costa Rica, for example, that you haven't heard anything that from for years, a stable nation. Maybe they could all go down to the liberal paradise of Venezuela. They better take some toilet paper and food with them, though. Look, this whole thing about Trump doesn't like brown people. I mean, he's done more for African-Americans and Hispanics. His approval ratings among those groups are up substantially than Barack Obama did. And he was America's first African-American president. I think this is a art. I think that it would be the same if all of a sudden hundreds of thousands of Irish people decided to immediately and illegally immigrate to the United States. It's not about the color of your skin. We have to have a legal system that will assimilate people, that will help them become fully Americans, that have talents that will contribute to the economic and otherwise health of the country and not detract from it. Any nation requires that, including Ireland, the UK, most of Europe, and virtually every other nation on Earth that has freedom as part of its culture.
Well, there you have it, Marion. Kyle is saying it's
very
not about
quickly.
The color of your skin. It's about the content of your character. Isn't that what we should all be thinking about?
Can I refute that very quickly? First of all, the number of the levels of immigration from Mexico and from are at their lowest in 40 to 50 years. People are not coming over like they used to. What's mainly coming over now are asylum seekers. They're women with small children. Look, I've spent weeks and weeks down on the border in McAllen and all along those border towns. I've seen it. It's not workers who are coming in because they know that they are getting visas. There are 380,000 temporary work visas issued, I think, a year to Mexico. So it's families who are seeking asylum, and the attempts to muddy these two are deliberate and are pretty cynical and pretty sinister. These are people who are fleeing life or death situations, and if you were to meet them and speak with them, you would know exactly why they are fleeing their countries. Donald Trump cannot say there's a sudden surge of illegal immigrants coming in. The numbers have dropped precipitously over the last four decades. They've dropped by 75% since the year 2000.
Yeah.
So, you know, that really doesn't fly. And if you take it all of a piece and you listen to Donald Trump's rhetoric, the way he speaks about Mexicans, the way he speaks about people who are coming in over the southern border, versus the way he speaks about, we'll say, Norwegians, for example, who he seems very fond of. And, you know, you don't, it's not just one thing. You've got to look at the whole thing, you know, overall. And then I don't think it's unfair to make those deductions, as I said, about the way he speaks about the border and sending the army down there and speaking about caravans in such an absurd way. And, you know, there are undeniable overtones of racism that he doesn't want brown people. And he built his campaign on that.
I have had the benefit of actually speaking to some people who came to America illegally. My little brother is actually married to a woman who was brought to America by a human trafficker. They're called coyotes. They are paid to bring you into the country. And their view was that America was where there was the greatest prosperity. That's why they wanted to go there. Cal, what would you think about that? Is that really what's happening here? Is that why they don't go to Costa Rica?
Well, we've talked about this on the show before with Matt. And every nation has a right to control its borders and decide who comes in and who doesn't. Ireland, we talked about last week, has...
We don't need a wall. We're an island, and
yeah,
so that, that's
yeah,
even
it's
more
very
effective.
Good. It's difficult to swim ashore, I know. But I think having said that, every nation has a right to determine who comes into the country or not. The fact is there are caravans. You can look at the pictures. Both parties are guilty of this, by the way. This is not a partisan issue. We've spoken on the show before about how the Republicans want cheap labor and the Democrats want more votes. So neither party will do fully what is necessary. All of them, whether Democrat presidents or Republicans, kind of wink at the situation, and they might build a couple of panels of wall and prove that they're trying to do something, or they might make a speech. I mean, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama made speeches about the need to control the border. So it's all basically phony baloney.
I just want to go to Marion now. The Clintons have been accused of nepotism in a new book on Irish U.S. relations. And Hillary Clinton has also come out and said she's not running in the 2020 election. We have a clip on that, I believe.
I'm not running, but I'm going to keep working and speaking and standing up for what I believe. I want to be sure that people understand I'm going to keep speaking out. I'm not going anywhere. What's at stake in our country, the kinds of things that are happening right now, are deeply troubling to me. We've gotten not just polarized, we've gotten into really opposing camps, unlike anything I've ever seen in my adult life.
What do you make of that, Marion? The failed presidential candidate who simply will not go away. Do you think she's toxic to the Democratic Party at this stage?
I think, honestly, the Democrats would much prefer if she did go away. But I think she has a right as a private citizen to say, if she's not happy about what's going on in the country, the same way as any other citizen has. But I don't think she has any business really inserting herself into the 2020 race. You know, there is a sort of a generation of Democrats, and I would actually put Joe Biden in that group and Bernie Sanders as well, where they've really had center stage for long enough, and I think it's really time they just moved off. They had their moment, their decades in the spotlight, and they had their opportunities to run 3-4 times, some of them. And I don't think they're doing the Democrats any favor by hanging around and hogging the limelight, because it's a negative limelight that they're attracting. I have a lot of respect for Hillary Clinton. I thought that she was unfairly treated in 2016, but I also thought her campaign was badly run. You know, I think there were elements of both in it, that there were certain things her campaign should have done that they just didn't. And she lost according to the rules of the U.S. elections, which say it's not about the votes, it's about the Electoral College. So, you know, she lost. So I think now that, you know, she can quietly mentor people, she can do stuff to encourage girls and young women to get involved in politics at a young age and at a younger age. She has a role she can absolutely play, but I don't think it's as a politician connected to the Democratic Party.
Cal, you must be bubbling over with fear at the prospect of the Republicans facing someone else, because now that Hillary's out of the race, they might put forward someone that people like. What will that mean?
Well, I think Hillary ought to be front and center. I think all of her ideas have been rejected twice, and a third time around would be a wonderful thing. Look, the Democrats don't have anybody. The new NBC News poll yesterday, and NBC News has no friend of President Trump or Republicans or anybody in this administration. NBC News poll yesterday showed 46% still approval. This is after the 90-some percent of the media, virtually all the Democratic Party and most of the culture, have thrown not only the kitchen sink, but the loo and the backyard and the roof and the bedrooms and the kitchen and everything else of this guy, and nothing sticks. I'm reminded of 1972 when Richard Nixon won a huge landslide re-election against George McGovern. The Democrats then knew that Nixon was going to win, and so they bided their time, and they ratcheted up the House Judiciary Committee, as they're doing this time with its chairman, the Democrat Gerald Nadler from New York, and they waited till after the election, and they moved on toward impeachment. I think that's exactly what you're going to see in this scenario.
I remember reading about that. All the thing about Watergate had actually already broken before the election took place, and he won anyway. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at what may be a Teflon Trump. I have to say, Marion McKeown, Cal Thomas, I've listened to you people so many times, and I'm so excited that I finally got to have a ringside seat and have this chat with you myself.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.